live. And who died and made doing a program live such a la-dee-da important thing? It's the Mike Novak Show. It's radio, podcast, town crier, cheerleader, and security blanket all rolled into one. And it even comes with a sing-along. Here we go.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
Hawaii, 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 as Arthur Godfrey used to say. Oh, Google it for crying out loud. I'm glad you're tuning in to iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher, SoundCloud, the GLN Radio Network, MikeNovak.net, or the Green Divas Global Digital Network at GDGDRadio.com. Wherever you're listening, thank you very much. Check out The Mike Novak Show on Facebook and on Twitter. Twitter with a T. Twitter. It's not Twitter with a D. Twitter. It's Twitter with a T. Check out The Mike Novak Show. My handle is at Mike Now. Or write to me with a T. Write to me anytime you like. Mike@MikeNovak.net. Have you ever been obsessed with your work? Poured your heart and soul into it, ate, drank, and slept it, and had to guide it over the rocky shoals and through the dark forest paths to bring it to fruition? Welcome to the world of Mike McDonald, who has spent the last 4 years of his life and about 22 years of his photographs in putting together a self-published coffee table book called My Journey into the Wilds of Chicago, a celebration of Chicagoland's startling natural wonders. To be brief, the book takes place in the 350 square miles of nature preserves within about an hour's drive of downtown Chicago. It features natural habitats, extraordinary biodiversity, yes, around the city of Chicago, wonderful photography, stirring writing, and more. Well, for starters, like introductions by Chicago journalist Bill Curtis, I can't even say it the way he says it, and conservationist Stephen Packard, both Chicago and national icons. Meanwhile, he's still working to put together the funding for the project, which you can help out by going to GoFundMe.com/Chicago book, where you can support the cause and put a book or two or three on order in time for the holidays. And if you go to GoFundMe.com/Chicago book, you'll get to see some of the photos that grace this book and will make you wonder, why haven't I visited these places around Chicago? It's a good question. Then I get to visit with somebody who I don't think has been on my show before, but I cannot imagine why. Mac Austin and I have been working in my neighborhood's community garden, Green on McLean, for 5 years. But Mac and I have known each other for more like 30 years. Because of her experiences with Green on McLean, she decided to hook up with a group called WOOF, which stands for Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms. It links volunteers with organic farms and growers all over the world. Mac took advantage of that and talks to me about some of her experiences. You can go to www.oof.net to get more information. And as always, you can go to MikeNovak.net, where all of the links and sites I mentioned on the show are always neatly wrapped and ready to use. And by the way, that show begins right after this.
Captain's log, stardate 42326.1. The Enterprise is under attack by an apparently hostile life form. Mr. Worf, status report.
They appear to be perambulating vegetables. We are being stalked by stalks.
of asparagus.
That is incorrect, Mr. Worf.
Mr. Data, be more specific.
Asparagus officinalis, or killer asparagus, was the subject of a very popular 21st century tome by the brilliant author Mike Novak.
Mike Novak. I'm familiar with his work.
Of course. Attack of the Killer Asparagus is required reading at Starfleet Academy.
Tell me more, Mr. Data.
He has been variously compared to Mark Twain, Dave Barry, and Gwynock of Ningladour.
Captain, shields are failing.
Thank you, Mr. Worf. Mr. Data, options.
Captain, it seems to be available online at aroundtheblockpress.com.
Aroundtheblockpress.com. What do they have to say?
It appears that Mike Novak is a slapstick everygardener, taking all our self-delusions, mishaps, and confusions and playing them for big laughs.
That's not very helpful, Mr. Data.
No, it is, however, highly accurate.
You're listening to the Mike Novak Show, and I headed out to Downers Grove. And Mike McDonald's home here in Downers Grove is where we're at, and his dining room or kitchen table here, and he's got his book not quite spread out yet, but it's in piles. But what you should know, first of all, is that Mike is putting together a book. Now, you can say, yeah, well, lots of people put together books, but they're not necessarily like this. And they don't involve the journey that Mike has gone through in putting this together. For one thing, you're self-publishing. Right? Oh, and by the way, hi, Mike, how are you?
Hi, Mike, how are you? Good.
And Mike's a photographer. I was looking at your cover. Wait, let me grab that here. It says internationally published nature photographer, author, comedian.
Yeah.
Say something funny.
Oh, you know, I'll be funny as we go, trust me. Yeah, just as a play off of it, yeah.
Educator, public speaker, computer programmer, and mathematician.
Yeah.
Not all these work together. Some of them do.
I think, in a way they do, because when I had the comedy came, I created the business as a result of losing my job. I think it was about 28 years ago, in a couple days from now, I used to work as a scientific programmer, and I lost my job. And around this time, I went to a Halloween party and dressed up as a nerd. I never went out of character. I wasn't trying that hard either. And really drawing upon the math and physics, like you were just saying.
Yeah.
And 6 weeks later, I lost my job at Baxter. And I started a company called Rent-A-Nerd. And traveled the country and was on national television and on Donahue.
I remember. Now, did we talk about it the last time you were on my show?
Maybe a little bit.
I think that's where I know about it.
Yeah, it was very fun. I had a gaggle of geeks working for me. They were very talented. You know, one of the people who worked for me ended up going on How I Met Your Mother and as a producer. I mean, the people who worked for me, extremely talented comedians, improvisational, kind of like in the vein of the old Saturday Night Live stars.
Sure.
Because
sure.
they embodied their character. All they had to do was like look at you a certain way or move their body, and you just laugh because it comes out of them. It's not just like a wisecrack, you know?
And I'm like you. I've worked with people who have gone on to great fame and fortune, leaving me in the mud in Chicago. And so we have something in common. We've worked with people who have become very, very famous.
Yeah, they
owe it all to us, right?
Yeah, and you know, like the thing is, but you bring up an important point. A lot of times when you're a comedian, let's just say comedian, if you were doing stand-up, you would leave, you'd go to New York or L.A., and then you'd return, and everyone in Chicago would say, wow, he's famous, and I knew him then, and I knew he'd always do it. But with my book, for example, My Journey into the Wilds of Chicago.
I'm glad we actually
Chicago.
Got to the title of the
right,
book at
right.
one point. Because here we are, you know, 4 minutes into the interview, and I haven't even given folks the title of the book. Give it to them one more time.
My Journey into the Wilds of Chicago, a celebration of Chicagoland's startling natural wonders. And, you know, the thing is, like, when you're local, like, what do they say? A sage is not a prophet in his own land. And it's very hard to make it where you are because people just say, oh, that's just Mike McDonald. I know him. And if you don't know somebody, people look up to them and go, wow, he's special. He's new. He's shiny. So there's a certain, and so you see it all the time when people leave town. But I thought, well, you know what? I'm here in Chicago, and I'm going to make it here in Chicago. And because I love Chicago, and I love Chicago nature.
If you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. No, wait, that's New York.
Yeah, well,
darn.
It's true for every place, I think, in that regard. I think it is.
You know, obviously, you want to get people to buy this book because it's your wonderful photographs. It's your writing on top of it is in this book. It's not just photographs. It is of nature in the Chicago area, and there might be people surprised to understand that there's a lot of nature in the Chicago area. You and I both know of an organization called Chicago Wilderness, and I think that phrase confuses people. They say, well, what do you mean by Chicago Wilderness? Well, Chicago Wilderness can happen on your block in downtown, depending on what it is. But as you point out, there's more than 350 square miles of nature preserves within an hour's drive of Chicago. And you seem to hang out in a lot of them.
Yes, I go to a lot of them. And the book features 47 chapters, and 24 of them are about individual preserves that I find as my favorites, but also the highest quality, the greatest biodiversity, the most beautiful, the places I go that I feel like I'm getting away. And the whole reason for the book wasn't to be like, oh, I'm Mike McDonald, you know, I want to show off my pictures. It really never occurred to me.
That's not a bad thing, though.
I know. Well, to me,
it's not. If they're good, it's not a bad thing.
No, but to me, it just seemed like I would say, well, what's the point? I mean, you know, maybe I'm really a bad businessman because probably I could and still make money, right? But that isn't why I did it. I did it because there's two reasons I did the book. When we were walking in, you saw one sculpture I did of this compass plant, and I made it in Door County. It's a steel sculpture, and it's 6 feet tall. And it's actually not compass plant, prairie dock. And it's
which is in the compass plant family.
Yeah,
they're both silphiums.
Yeah. And then as you walked in, you may have seen my little dog, Happy, with a coneflower in its mouth. And it's metal, and it's 29 pounds. And I was walking through Door County where I had made it in a welding shop there because, you know, when you go to Door County, don't you go welding? And so, don't you?
Every single time.
Yeah. I know, right. You know, so.
In my bathing trunks.
So my wife and I go to this outdoor, like this art place, and you could weld, you could do glass work, you could do, you know, ceramics, things like that. But they have a metal shop. So I made this dog, and as I was walking back through my hotel in Door County, someone stopped me in the hallway and said, "Did you make that?" I go, "Yeah." He goes, "What do you want for it?" I said, "Well, no, we really love it. It's really cute." And she said, and I thought I was depressed for 3 hours after that. And my wife was cheering me up. And it was because I thought, well, I'm here with a dog. I mean, it's not even what I do for a living. I mean, if I was walking through a Chicago hotel with one of my large prairie prints, nobody would stop me and say, "Wow, did you make that? Wow, what do you want for it?" Because people don't know.
They might. You don't know that, though, because I'm looking around your living room here, and you've got your prints up, and you've printed them on canvas, which is really, really cool, which I have not seen before. And it gives them a feeling as though they've been painted, but they're actually photographs.
Yeah.
And if you were walking down a hall in Chicago, I might ask you where you got that, where I could get one of those.
Well, but you're a nature nerd, Mike, and so are everyone listening to this thing. So it's like the average person, and so I'll build on that in a moment because the second story actually addresses that specifically. So someone said, "Well, Mike, you're just going to have to educate them then." You know, if that's the case, if they don't know, you're going to have to educate them, because the bottom line of that story is the only way. The reason the guy loved the sculpture of the dog is because he knows dogs, because you can't love the dog unless you know the dog. And so how could they fall in love with nature, if the prairie, if they don't even know it's there?
Well, that's true, because one of the photos you have in your book, which I think is very telling, is of a garlic mustard and buckthorn.
Right.
And it looks beautiful.
Yeah.
It does. And if you don't know anything about nature, you don't know how invasive and how destructive
right.
those plants are.
Yes. And so that's the thing. I mean, when I talk about in the book about how before I discovered Chicago Wilderness magazine and before I was submitting to them, I thought everything green was beautiful. And everything, you know, and I was green, you know, really deep down, right? I didn't know any better. And then I realized there are, like, right now it's fall. And if you go around, you'll see all the invasive and alien species, the ones that are their worst, like honeysuckle and buckthorn and things like that, those are still green now. Mm-hmm. And if you look around the preserves, that's all you'll see is this green. And you'll say, wow, we have so much work to do. It's kind of a sad time of year, even though it's beautiful. The second story I had, which drives the point home, is I was on the telephone with my Renner-nerd business with a customer. And I don't remember her name, but let's just call her Daisy. And this is what starts off the book. We get into conversations with my customers, and she goes, oh, I love nature, she said. I go, you love nature? I go, well, I'm a nature photographer. Yeah, and there's a lot of nice places around here you can see. And she goes, oh, yeah, but, you know, I really love butterflies. I said, you love butterflies? Well, I know the butterfly man. He's at the nature museum, you know, Doug Tarrant at the, the nature museum, and maybe you could help him out because he's over at Bluff Spring Fen releasing butterflies, and you can kind of help him with things. And she says, oh, no, Mike, I just collect butterfly refrigerator magnets.
And there they are behind us. Oh, my goodness.
The first photograph in the book, essentially, with my preface,
is the butterfly. And I remember that story, and it strikes home.
Right.
You can say that you love nature, but a lot of people love nature from afar.
Yeah, well, they love nature from the comfort of their TV room or on their electronic screens. And so this book strives to get people in touch with nature, because like my idea is most people don't even know that this nature is there in Chicago. So it's my job to introduce them, to actually introduce them to that gorgeous neighbor next door and to spark thousands and thousands of love affairs. I am playing matchmaker. And how better than to introduce people to the large landscape, different than a bug on a flower, which those are pretty pictures and they're important. But the landscapes I make are startling. That's why the actual title is called, you know, the subtitle is A Celebration of Chicagoland's Startling Natural Wonders, because every page turn for the average Chicagoan is going to be like a delightful shock and awe experience, because every turn they'll say, no way, this can't be here, because they're vast landscapes that you wouldn't expect.
But it's also because you immerse yourself in those landscapes in a way that most people do not. I mean, for instance, wading into a pool or a pond with a tent on your head, basically. It's a very,
well,
very
yeah, but that
thing.
Well, that's actually, well, actually, the majority, well, that's when I work a blind and I'm in a wetland.
Right, it's a blind, but it looks like a big tent on your head.
Yeah, it's a tin can. It's like a tin can without a bottom. It's camouflaged. But here's the thing, Mike. That's when I photograph wildlife, and I was shooting in the wetlands, you know, like egrets and herons and things like that. But the majority of the photos in the book are of the prairie and the savanna and some woodland shots and things and a little bit of wetland. But the point is that I'm on trails. I'm doing what everyone else sees. I don't think there's lots of places around here that the minute you're in, you're immersed. So I really don't think, you know, I don't think
the average person can experience the same thing you experience.
Oh, yeah. I'm just on a trail like everyone else.
Yeah. Except that you're usually there at 3 a.m. And you might have scouted it out the night before.
It's still the same place. I mean,
yes,
it's just,
it is.
Okay,
but your experience is a little different because you do it methodically.
Well, I have it's a chapter in the book is called Get Your Own Girl. And it's about me dating Lady Luck. And Lady Luck, but she was too much trouble. You know, she wanted me to see her all the time, to go back over and over again, because the only way I'm going to get lucky is if I go back over and over again, because the prairie's constantly changing every week, every 2 weeks. And you go back and it's like a different landscape. It's a different world. It's a different color palette. You know, it could be pink and white, and now it's yellow and purple. You know, it just changes all the time, or just all white. And then in September, it's all golden. And it's like, whoa, right? So I remember going to Bluff Spring Fen. And I said, okay, I'm going to go back here, and I'll come back in like a week and a half. This is when I first started to go there, and I didn't know all the plants that were growing there. So I would go, and I'd go back in a week and a half or a week, and I missed all the flowers were fading all around, were shriveling. And so the story is basically like this. I went out with Lady Luck. She was too much trouble. So I said, forget it. So I dated her sister, Dumb Luck. And Dumb Luck said, basically, you know, you show up, and maybe I'll show you something. But only once. I only got lucky once, and all the other times there were shriveling flowers all around. And so I turned back to Lady Luck, and we've had a wonderful relationship ever since. And that's kind of what people need to do. If they really want to experience this stuff, go back, take a look, come back a few days later, maybe a week later. But It's just persistence. It has nothing to do with something, someone's inability to go there.
And that's Mike McDonald, photographer, author, and comedian, and nerd, and
entrepreneur. Mike,
what?
Entrepreneur, Mike.
Entrepreneur.
Yeah,
I like that. Yeah. Entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. His book is called "My Journey into the Wilds of Chicago: A Celebration of Chicagoland's Startling Natural Wonders." We'll have more about this in a second. You're listening to The Mike Novak Show. You might not know it, but I write a column for Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. And if you say, what's that got to do with me? It would be a good question. And the answer is that Chicagoland Gardening is just one of a number of great gardening magazines produced by State Gardening. They're the folks who write my checks. And they're the folks who publish magazines in 21 states, from Minnesota to Florida, from Pennsylvania to Oklahoma. That means that you can subscribe to Kentucky Gardener, but depending on what side of the river you're on, you might want a subscription to Indiana Gardener, or Ohio Gardener, or Tennessee Gardener, or Louisiana Gardener. And they feature articles by some of the leading garden experts in each state, including famous authors, nursery owners, state extension agents, master gardeners, and even me. Subscribe today by going to statebystategardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600. Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show, and the ambience you hear is because we're in the dining room slash kitchen of Mike McDonald, who calls himself an entrepreneur. I used to be. He's actually a quite accomplished photographer and writer. His new book is My Journey into the Wilds of Chicago, A Celebration of Chicagoland's Startling Natural Wonders. The book is coming out right about now, you know, in the November, December time. You want to have it done for Christmas, right?
Yeah, the book will be finished for Christmas. Next week, I get the book in pieces. It's it's finished printing. Next week, I'll have it in pieces. Once I approve it and I'm really crossing my fingers, then they bind it. That takes 10 days. And then on November 11th, it gets shipped here.
And it's being done in Asia, right?
Yeah.
A lot of books are done there.
If you're not doing it there, you'll be broke, because, you know, I get, you know, instead of $40,000 to print the book, it was $140,000 in Chicago.
Oh, my goodness.
Right.
Well, and that's a really important point, is that you're self-published here. It's a beautiful book. I mean, you showed me this, which, what do they call this?
They call this a blank. It's basically a...
And it's a blank.
My book with no printing whatsoever.
But it shows you the size, it shows you the texture, the cover, and the pages.
Yeah.
And it's a real beautiful coffee table book. And when you add these photos, and you have a stack of them here, this is going to be one heck of a present that you could get or give somebody for the holidays.
Yes, I'm actually holding the crowdfunding campaign at GoFundMe.com/ChicagoBook.
Which I will make sure is on my website so people can link right to it. So if they are listening to this and they go to MikeNovak.net, you'll have the link there, and then you can go to the GoFundMe.
Yes, and the book basically is... I'm doing this book no matter what, okay? It doesn't matter, you know, but I'm trying to not be broke, because it costs my fundraiser is for $72,000, and then it costs $8 to ship a book, plus that you have to pay the GoFundMe like 8% after the smoke clears. So it's like, when I'm done, I'll make like 55 grand, and that's about right. So where I'm coming here, when I'm coming from here is that...
And then how many books are going to get printed?
3,400 books.
And what's the retail cost?
The retail will be $75, plus sales tax, plus shipping. So that's like, would be $89. So if you go to the GoFundMe, it's $69 flat right now, and you get yourself a deal. And if you buy multiple books, which is the idea of the book, because this book is about getting the spreading the word, not to just those in the choir. So if you buy a book, then give one to somebody else. So that's the whole idea. And 40% of the people in my campaign are buying more than one book, so that they can have one for themselves and give it away to others. And it'll be available before Christmas. And the book is printed at the finest art book printer in the world. They have colors that reach what you often see on your monitor. And I don't know if you're familiar with typical printing methods using CMYK inks, cyan, magenta, yellow, and black, traditional normal gamut inks where the colors are within a normal color range. When you try to print the pinks and the purples that are really in the prairie and these yellowy greens, and they die in a normal book. So I had to go to I found a printer that actually uses high density inks so that the colors are remarkable. Sort of like maybe when people were kids and they dropped that Easter egg into that dark blue fluid. It was white. And then the kid, I remember pulling it out with a spoon. And it's like, Mom, it's like this really light blue. It's like, what's going on? And you're a kid. And so it's depressing. Well, the difference is just imagine a blue that's black. So blue it's black. And you drop your egg in, and when you pull it out, it's a beautiful blue. That's kind of a way of explaining it. You get the colors that you really wanted that are in the picture, but disappear when you print it traditionally. So this is you still using CMYK inks, but they're a very dense ink, and they're able to achieve the colors. And so when people see this book, I will bet you people will even know it because of their experience with books and pictures. They will see the difference, and I don't have to tell them.
Yeah. And you should know, folks, that he's got forewords by Bill Curtis. Yes, that Bill Curtis, the guy who pronounces environment. and Stephen Packard.
Yes.
One of the most knowledgeable folks from Audubon.
Yeah, well, he's world-renowned conservationist. Yeah. People around the world know of him. And Bill Curtis also, I asked him, I said, I got Bill Curtis to do it only because I sent him an email with like a mock-up of the book early on, yeah. A PDF. And he called me the next day. He loved it. And then I don't know him. I didn't know him. I just thought he would want to be part of it.
Any idea whether he wrote that himself or one of his people wrote it?
Oh, no. I know he wrote it. I was helping him. We were, you know, I'm an editor.
With him.
Well,
okay.
No. Well, he wrote it, but I'm, of course, as the publisher, I hire an editor, but I take my first shot at it. And then I give it to my editor, and we work it, and then we send it back to him. So, and same thing with Steve. Steve gave us his words, and you know, we worked with him to craft it a little bit too. So, but Bill Curtis, I was on the phone one day, and I said, "Hey, Bill, do you think you could be in my crowdfunding video? Yeah, you could do a voiceover." And he says, "Well, Mike, I was thinking on camera." And I go, "Okay." And I'm just, you know, and so it was wonderful because he wanted to be on camera.
I saw it. I'm so impressed that he there he is in the studio and doing his Bill Curtis.
Yes, very good.
Very best Bill Curtis. All right, let's look at some of these photos here because you've got a stack. And we're not going to, folks, you got to get the book. Okay, you know, that's sort of the upshot of this. However, some of these amazing photos, just take some of your favorites here and flip through. Now, you've got two versions of this. One is
one on my right here, which all of you can see out there.
That's right. You put on your 3D glasses and it'll help.
Yes, and the first, when you compare pictures, there's the publishing process requires a proofing. And when I create the prints on my own printer, and then I send it to them, and they give me a proof to match against.
So is the one on the right here your own printer?
Yes, this is mine, and I had to print out like 200, just over 200 pictures in the book.
And where is that photo taken?
This is Spears Woods. It's right after a frost, and the light is coming through the trees along the wetland. The wetland is called Hogwash Slough. And one of the captions in the book is, "Never have I set eyes on beautiful Hogwash Slough and thought, wow, what a perfect place to shampoo my pigs."
Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah, but think about it. It's true. What a terrible name.
I know. And I remember reading that and thinking, okay, there's the comedian.
Yeah, there's the comedian. So do you see how the right, this is the first proof. They have the second proof at the printer because you see how flat this is compared to this.
You're right. It's not quite as rich.
Right. It has, the blacks are failing in here and you don't have the detail. So most people probably wouldn't even notice that if I just showed this picture without the one next to it, they'd go, wow, what a great shot. But this is my standard. So I'm putting them through their paces over there. And
I have to ask you a question, just popped into my head. Over how many years were these photographs taken?
Over 22 years. A lot of them were taken, a lot of them were probably taken over the past 10, the great majority of them. And I've been writing the book for 4.5 years.
Wow.
and writing it and then editing it. And it's always, you know, proofreading finally. And so there's a map I hired, one of the more famous map makers probably in the country. And
really?
Yeah, Chicago Cartographics.
Yeah, and I like the map. It's lovely, and it's a map of all the natural areas in the Chicago region.
What's really nice is what I did differently with my book than a publisher would is I spared no expense that I thought was, you know, necessary. And a map like this, you'll never see a map like this in a traditionally published book because nobody wants to spend the money on that, because if they can shave $500 off or $1,000 or $500, you know, $1,500 off, but I don't care. I'm thinking people should get what they need. And this is my book. And this map is only 12 inches by 24, which you think is big, but it actually is very small for a map that covers over 1,000 square miles of the Chicago area. Mm. And if you look at every one of these locations, the odds are you could actually drive there from this map, because even little roads are shown. So it's a two-page map. It's wonderful.
So if folks look at your wonderful photographs and they say, I want to be there, they can go right to the map.
Right to the map. In fact, even the map acts like, actually, the map even has, this is kind of different for a map. This was my idea. I put page numbers so that all the locations, so it acts as an index too, so they can go straight to that place on within the book that discusses those locations.
All right. All of your photographs are your children. Yeah. And I know you can't say that I have a favorite child, and I wouldn't expect you to, but you might have a favorite group or kind of photograph that you take. Is that a case, or is it everything wonderful to you?
Well, I know what you're saying. When I'm taking it, I'm in love. I'm actually in love. You know, I actually feel this, you know, wow, it kind of goes through me. But there are certain kinds of images that I think are the most difficult to take and that bring out the three-dimensionality of a Chicago landscape, which is very hard. Many years ago, I thought that, you know, there are all these people going out west and shooting the mountains. How could I bring that same drama to a flat Chicago landscape? And so
you have a story in the book about that, how you were out visiting one of those scapes and then you came back to Chicago and said, oh, is this possibly going to compare?
Yes.
with being out in the mountains? And the result was,
well, that was called Second City, Second to None. That's one of the first chapters, and that's the first chapter in the book. And it basically is not about the photography as much as it's about, even better, how beautiful and wonderful it is here, and how I was seeing swans with their cygnets. I saw bison, and I saw coyote and moose and all these things. And then I come home, and I wonder, what's going to be here? I'm like, how is this going to compare now that I returned? Am I going to be jaded? I'm going to think Chicago has so little. And as I was driving through the forest preserves of Cook County, I saw swamp rose mallow in a wetland along the shore, and it was all these pink, huge pink flowers. And I said, yeah, but that's nothing. And then I drove comparatively, right? Uh-huh. And so then I drove I got to McGinnis Slough, and I was walking near Orland Park, and as I was going past, there were all these flashes of white between between the slits of cattails, of green cattails, and it was like flashing. And I thought to myself, could this be? And I snuck out of the car and I snooped down and I crawled over with my lens and I looked through, and there are 75 great egrets fishing in the shallow waters. And it was just this remarkable experience. And so,
oh my goodness,
that's kind of like, that was better than anything I saw out there.
Wow.
And so I knew Second City was second to none. But then later on with the photography, I noticed that you need to have a three-dimensional way of photographing the world. And my style is extremely immersive. And even if you can see in this picture, which you'll see how flowers, they fly off the page.
Yeah.
Because there's a style I've created over the many years. And this, you can see here.
Oh my goodness. Explain what that is.
Well, this is a woodland. Actually, this is a Somme Prairie Grove in Northbrook. And it has these blue flowers, and they're called bellflower. And then there are purple Joe Pye weed, though I kind of disagree. They're more pink. But that's the name of the plant.
Well, that is pink.
I like, yeah.
I've always thought Joe Pye weed was pink.
Well, so there's two different kinds. There's one that's in the wetland, and those are more colorful. And then they call this one purple. But I like to call it sweet Joe Pye weed or woodland Joe Pye weed. And the point is, in this picture, you can see how the light comes in and highlights just certain plants where it pops off the page. They're not blended into the background. So I'm using natural light, which I have no control over. I stand there thinking it'll happen, and I wait for an hour or 45 minutes and hope the light hits this one and this one, do-do-do-do-do, throughout the scene, hoping that it hits the proper flowers to make them jump off the page and separate it from the darker flowers and darker greens behind there. So I use a technique of glancing light, which really makes things, like, jump.
Do you crop, or is what you see through your lens what you get on the page?
Well, when I'm starting off to take a picture, or better yet, let's start here. When you take a picture, you're given a frame in the viewfinder that you're stuck with, aren't you? Right, Mike? Stuck with that rectangle.
Sure.
You're stuck with that aspect ratio. The aspect ratio can be kind of skinny for 35 millimeter film, where it's a 2x3 ratio, 2 tall by 3 wide. Or when I was shooting medium format film, it was more like 3 high by 4 wide, which is a little pudgier, a little fatter, which is wonderful. And so you're stuck with that aspect ratio. So when you're taking a picture, I work with that aspect ratio. Occasionally, though, you may, while you're taking it, I may say, you know, there's too much sky here, but that's okay. I'll just crop that off later. But it's rare that I'm cropping, and it's not bad to crop. I mean, because you're stuck
with the aspect
ratio. Some
people might say that's cheating.
No, it's not cheating. It's just you don't have the right square. I think they'd say other things are cheating, but that's a minor point as to cropping. I think what's interesting about there's a big difference between the three-dimensional world and the two-dimensional world. And when we're in the three-dimensional world, we don't notice really anything. But the second you take a picture of that same thing, people notice everything. So,
well, that's because you have given it a frame.
Well,
and you're demanding that people look inside the frame you've created.
Yes, very true. Exactly. But you've also said to everybody, by the way, hey, everybody, this is important to me.
Right.
Whether you say it or not, it's implied. It's like this, whatever is in this frame is important. But think about it this way, especially a landscape, or just better yet, Mike, I'm looking at you right now, and there's a photograph of mine behind you. If I took your picture, I don't even notice, and everybody on the radio here, just listen, just look at anything right now, and just look at it, look at anything, and then notice that it's like a cutout figure. You know, you don't notice anything behind it, anything around it. Everything's a cutout. Mike is a cutout right in front of me, but there's a vent sticking out of his head if I would take a picture in the background. There is the other picture. There's a light switch. There's a shelving unit. There's all these things sticking out of Mike. So it's all about creating. So there's a three-dimensional world that collapses into two, which is really problematic. Now, in a landscape, you want that, but the problem is everything collides. So it's this technique I've been using and teaching over the years and ideas that I've developed about using light and composition to create that extremely immersive three-dimensional effect that makes my pictures, I think, different. Because I often push the lens 5 inches from the flower. If they would see me doing that in the Bible Belt, they'd arrest me.
The book is called My Journey into the Wilds of Chicago, A Celebration of Chicagoland's Startling Natural Wonders. Where can people go to get this?
They can get it at GoFundMe.com.
So you don't actually have a website for the book yet?
I do, but there's no point since I'm going from the GoFundMe is where it's getting all the excitement. So let's just go with that.
Okay.
The website, I mean, it's ChicagoNature.com is my website. It's new. And so GoFundMe.com/ChicagoBook.
All right. And I'll have that link on MikeNovak.net. Mike McDonald, thank you so much. Good. You're in the midst of all this angst. I mean, one of the interesting things about talking to you right now is like you're just days away from seeing the product.
Yes.
And you're a mess, aren't you?
Yeah. I'm on more pins and needles than a Buddhist monk on a bed of nails. I'm just really like extreme. I mean, like, you know, it's my baby.
It's all going to work out. It's beautiful photos, great writing. You're going to do well, but I'm wishing you all the best.
Thank you.
Trying to weather the housing market? Consider replacing your windows and siding. Remodeling Magazine says they're some of the nation's most popular projects today.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling and energy needs. Rated A+ by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I've got great news about Natural Awakening Chicago. We're now available throughout the city and suburbs, from Lake County to the Indiana state line. If you own a green business or offer healthy living or wellness products and services, you should be working with our marketing team to get your message out to our targeted audience. Join us, won't you? We're online at nachicagonorth.com or call us today at 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show. I have talked a lot on this show over the years about local farms, local food, urban farms, community gardens, how folks should be growing produce in their own backyards. And I'm always amazed at what I don't know. And one of the things I did not know about was an organization called Woof. Now, I'm told by my friend Hillary Mac Austin, who shall go by the name of Mac, that if I were 20 or a 20-something, I might know what Woof was. And it's actually spelled W-W-O-O-F. Mac, how are you?
Hi, Michael. How are you?
Learning every day, as I said.
Well, Woof stands for Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms.
Ah, okay, and it didn't used to stand for worldwide. It used to be called Working Weekends on Organic Farms.
That's, and I think that's when it was just in England. It was started in England in the early 1970s, 1971.
August of 1971. Okay, here we are, 44 years later, and I had never heard of the organization.
I hadn't until 2 years ago.
And how did you find out about it?
Well, with all of the very, very bad news I get listening to your radio show.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. My pleasure. I sort of hit a wall. And I think it was around the time you were talking to a couple of people who were basically saying, the end is nigh, really, really, really.
Oh, and, you're probably talking about Guy
McPherson. That's it.
You were listening to the show about Guy McPherson and featuring Guy McPherson, who was on the show, and mm-hmm. he's a
and
guy.
And I think the following week you had the guy from IIT or
right.
University of Illinois who talks about the different ways to adapt.
Blake Davis.
Changes. Yes.
That's a 1-2 punch there, because both of these guys say basically that civilization is going to collapse probably within a decade or two, so you better be prepared for it.
Right. So I just decided to start looking up and seeing what was out there in terms of could I learn from somebody who was already living sustainably. And I did a Google search, and I think I initially Googled Mennonite Farms Volunteering or something like that. And what came up was Woof. And so I joined. And so the way the system works is that each country has its own Woof organization. Mm-hmm. And so I joined U.S. Woof, and you pay a fee to get access essentially to their database of farms. Almost every single country has a WOOF organization.
I'm looking at, for instance, WOOF Cameroon, Nigeria, mm-hmm. Sierra Leone, South Africa, Uganda. There's in Argentina, Belize, Brazil, Canada, Colombia, Costa Rica, Ecuador, Guatemala, Australia, Bangladesh, China, India, Japan, New Zealand, Austria, Belgium, Bulgaria, Czech Republic, Denmark, Hungary, Ireland, Israel, Italy, Norway, where you've been, right?
Yep. Yes. I want to check out and join WOOF Norway because I didn't WOOF in Norway. But I'm really interested now that I've seen the landscape there. So, oh, wow. I'd really like to see what they're doing.
Oh, so you just happened to visit Norway, but you didn't.
I happened to visit Norway, and I knew people whose daughter had a farm. So I just visited them, but they're more theater people with a bunch of sheep.
I beg your pardon.
Full-time farmers.
Theater people with a bunch of sheep?
Yeah.
That sounds rather pejorative.
Well, I didn't mean it that way. I think they're very good theater people, and their sheep look really happy. So I'm sure they're very good people with very, very happy sheep.
And before we go any further, people should know that they can find this by going to wwoof.net. And the other thing folks should know is that Mac and I have known each other for, oh my gosh, decades now, which is scary. But we've also worked together in a community garden, which is the community garden in my neighborhood, Green on McLean, which we ran for 5 years until
5 years.
They started digging it up with backhoes. And
so sad.
I know. It really is.
It is. But I think that also the experience at Green on McLean and volunteering at the bird sanctuary and the dunes area at Montrose was also a part of getting into the WWOOF thing, because I realized that what made me happy was working outside.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been a city person, you know, my entire adult life. I don't have a garden. I've lived in apartments my entire adult life. So I just thought, okay, let me try this and see this and see if I can learn and see what people are doing and if I like it, and just sort of have a bit of an escape from the life I've been living and see if that sort of jostled anything and made anything new happen.
And you're not a 20-something.
And I'm not a 20-something. And it's most woofers are 20-somethings, but not all, which is really nice. So
really nice.
I wasn't quite as much of a freak as I was afraid I would be.
Well, you know, and everybody's got different reasons for doing this. I wonder what were the reasons for the 20-somethings being out there?
I think a lot of 20-somethings, I'd say some want to learn about farming or sustainable living. That's a huge percentage. They are as concerned as we are about the way the earth is heading, and they want to learn.
And right. And if Guy McPherson is right, or McPherson, however you pronounce it, and we're all going to heck in a handbag in about a decade, you better know how to farm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. And then I think for a lot of other people, it's a way to travel and see the world and meet people and learn basically very inexpensively, because the way WWOOF works is that you sign up with a farm, they agree, you figure out how long you're going to be there, and then while you're there, you work for them, and they feed you and house you. So,
But you don't make any money.
But you don't make any money.
So you have to pay your way out there, and you will survive on the food and lodging that they provide.
Yeah.
In exchange for your work in the field. And I saw someplace it was, it's like 4 to 6 hours a day. Did you have rules about that?
Yeah, I personally went into every situation sort of very openly and thinking, whatever, let's see how they do it. Some places were very strict about, you have worked your 5 hours, stop.
Mm.
And that was kind of nice, especially since that was the first farm I worked.
Well, it's kind of like having a union, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But other places don't take that as strictly. So some places aren't very organized. I showed up at one farm, very nice man, but he said, oh, well, what do you want to do? Make your own schedule. And that was hard for me at first because I didn't feel as though I knew enough. I wasn't coming saying, oh, I want to build a cold frame. Oh, here's an opportunity to do it. So each farm is a bit different. Other farms I worked almost as hard as everybody else on, you know, the farm. So I worked a full 8-hour day.
Mm-hmm.
With breaks for lunch. I expect if I had said, oh, I'm tired, I've got to stop, they wouldn't have beat me.
Especially because you're ancient.
Yes, right.
I didn't mean to
creaky
take...
Creaky and old.
Creaky and old.
Proudly, Michael, very proudly, I was told that on one farm that I worked harder and more effectively than the young ones. Oh, I was so happy to hear that.
Oh, let me give you you get a ding for that, okay, because you beat the 20-somethings on the farm. That's my buddy Mac Austin, who was a volunteer and has continued to be a volunteer for WOOF. Tell me again, that stands for?
Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms.
Give me an idea of the kinds of things you did on these farms, especially the ones that, well, that were new to you and might have caught you off guard a little bit.
Well, I think that I expected to do more food preservation work or making cheese or things like that, and I never stayed at farms long enough to really get into things like that.
How long did you stay on average?
On average, I stayed a week and a half to 2 weeks, and that's pretty short for WOOF terms. A lot of WOOFers will stay for a month or two.
Okay.
So if I go out and do this again, I might do that, because then you get to know people, they get to know you that much better, you get more into the rhythm of the farm itself. If there are farm animals, which there usually are, you get to know those farm animals, and so you get just more opportunities, plus you get more of a sense of what happens at the different time periods of the year.
Right.
But I did everything from heavy duty all day, picking beans, picking okra, picking leeks, potatoes to prepare for the farmer's market, washing all the vegetables. I was unprepared for how much water and how much time goes into preparing vegetables for the market. Mm. And it really taught me and really made it real to me how much the looks, how much effort and water goes into making our produce look the way we want it to look.
Would you call it cosmetic use of water?
Oh, yeah. Very much so.
Interesting.
Some of it might be that you wash it off and that cures it, or you I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any point to it apart from making it look better. Leeks are always full of dirt and sand and soil, so you have to wash them.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of it is purely cosmetic. And
interesting.
I've talked to farmers who talk about industrial farms in California. Sort of the huge amount of the water used in the agriculture is not to actually irrigate, it's to wash the produce. And then you wash it when you get home.
Yeah, right. So you wash it again, so which means it sounds like, to me, we need to re-educate the consumer and say,
mm-hmm.
and if you buy a leek and it's got stuff on, well, take it home and wash it. And don't look at it askance simply because mm-hmm. it's got dirt on it, because guess what? It came out of the ground.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So that was a big surprise to me, something that I learned and has changed the way I think about the food that I eat, the amount of time that people have to spend to get their food to the farmer's market, to prepare it for the farmer's market rather than just grow it.
Mm.
So each person, each farm is trying to figure it out. Nobody seems to have a lock kind of on the answer for how to be sustainable and how to make things work. And each farm has a different goal for what they, that I visited at least, for what they want out of their farm, whether they want to escape from modern society, whether they want to bring peace to the world, whether they want to make it a profitable enterprise. Each group had a different sort of goal in mind in some ways.
And what about livestock? What were your experiences with livestock?
I love the livestock. Cows are large and scary. Beef cattle, very large, very scary. goats are a lot of fun. Milking goats is very hard. Bunnies are cute even when they're raised for food, and happily I didn't have to participate in the killing of the little cute little bunnies.
You actually talked to me about preparing a turkey?
A turkey. Yeah, yeah. So for the first time in my life, I wasn't there when the turkey was butchered, because I wasn't needed there, and they didn't want anybody there who wasn't needed. But as soon as the turkey was butchered, it's dipped in hot water, and you have to defeather it and cut it open and get all the innards out and things like that. And I had never done anything like that. And so it was really interesting. It wasn't nearly as I was prepared to be either grossed out or upset or freaked out, and it wasn't. And I think largely because it had to happen so quickly. Mm. It was just get it done, so that no bacteria gets on the meat. And then we had wonderful turkey soup later, and I felt not a twinge.
Interesting. So that changed.
Didn't get to know those particular turkeys too well, though. So
you didn't name them, and you
didn't name them. That's right. So I haven't quite gotten to the point of butchering something that I've either gotten to know or think is cute.
That's probably a good thing for.
I'm not against doing it, because part of the process of what I'm learning is, each time I get a little bit closer to how I get the food, teaches me so much about the world, and just it changes my relationship to it. It's been really interesting.
Mac Austin, I think maybe the next time you do this, we might have to chat again. This is really fascinating stuff.
Oh, I would love it. I would love it. And I would suggest for any person that feels like they want to reconnect with where their food comes from, you know, whether it's an urban farm here or woofing or something, to do it, because it really does shift how you look at food.
Well, even in a community garden, and I'm not going to pat myself on the back because it's really, that's a small thing. But you just learning how plants grow and what their
exactly.
needs are,
mm-hmm.
can change your outlook. And of course, woof provides much more than that. And again, it's worldwide mm-hmm. opportunities on organic farms. You can go to wwoof.net. Mac Austin, we'll talk again about this, and I'll see you in the future in some community garden or other.
Great, and thank you so much for having me on.
And one final thing, you get to help me close the show. Go green or...
go home.
You can find more information about The Mike Novak Show at mikenovak.net. That's MikeNowak.net. For links, photos, and commentary.